Today is Thursday. It's August 17th, 2017. It's 11:11 in the morning. I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio in Chicago. Portions of this are broadcast on my Saturday morning show at 11:10 a.m.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch on WGN.
And I'm Krista McQuarrie, a member of the Chicago Tribune editorial board.
I'm Eric Zorn, the frighteningly self-righteous columnist from the Tribune. I run Wednesdays, Fridays, and Sundays.
We knew you were self-righteous, but what's so frightening about it?
This is what readers were telling me about for my column earlier this week about the monuments. I was frighteningly self-righteous, and I said, but that is in my job description. So,
well, let's get to that, shall we? I think we've all made up our minds about Donald Trump and how enlightened or courageous his views on race are. No one's going to change their mind on this issue right now, including him. The topic today really has become about monuments after the president's three conflicting sets of statements about the violence and death in Charlottesville. He's now turned the debate to which monuments or statues should remain, and he says keep all of them, essentially don't bury history. Today's Tribune and Sun-Times both have found statues in Chicago, one that honors Italo Balbo, another one that is a monument to fallen Confederate soldiers, which are now the subjects of debate. Eric, what are you so self-righteous about on this?
Well, I'm self-righteous about the idea that, I mean, first of all, these statues for Robert E. Lee, Jefferson Davis, Stonewall Jackson, and other leaders of the Confederacy and military leaders there, they were installed, some of them actually rather late in our history, as kind of a middle finger to people who were advocating for the end of segregation, who were advocating for civil rights. That what these statues stand for is this rebellion against this country. I mean, the people like Washington and Jefferson built this country. People like Robert E. Lee and Jefferson Davis decided they were going to tear the country apart.
So they're like Confederate flags these
days? They're traitors. They're treasonous. And the fact that we have sort of for years kind of forgotten that. We've fuzzed it over. So it stands for, you know, good old Southern hospitality and Southern cooking. And it doesn't mean that these symbols haven't been painful reminders to a lot of people as to what this region of the country is proud of, and they have to go. I mean, that's basically my take on this is they in every public setting, public park, anything that is there to honor members of the Confederacy has to go.
What do you think?
No, I just disagree. I don't think they have to be viewed as painful reminders. I think that's kind of dancing around what is our history. They are reminders that the Confederacy was unsuccessful. They are reminders that we are a land that appreciates diversity, that we are a country built on opportunity. And I would suggest to groups that don't like these monuments, then let's fundraise and build something else with, you know, what would you like to memorialize? Who would you like to counter a statue of Robert E. Lee with? But I just think taking them down is it's just pointless. It's silly.
Who says Donald Trump isn't a politician? I mean, he gave comfort to Nazis this week, and by the end of the week, the subject has changed to statues around the country. This isn't what this should be about, but this has become what it's about. Whether it's Balbo in Chicago, right before I came in to sit down here, Nancy Pelosi apparently moved to have all Confederate statues removed from the Capitol grounds. Come on, Nancy, you're playing into their hands.
No,
it's ridiculous.
I disagree.
Now this is going to become about that, and this isn't about that.
But
this is
about. What do you want to talk
about?
This
is about swastika wearing, torch bearing people who call Jews and black people animals. That's what this is about, and they're going to succeed in us debating whether or not to take down statues of George Washington.
It all stands for what we are as a country and what our public values are. And that's why I draw a distinction between what's on private property and what's on public property. We've got a statue to Robert E. Lee. Robert E. Lee is one of the great traitors in our history. He led a treasonous rebellion. He should have been hanged at the end of the war, probably. In fact, it was Lincoln's probably smart decision not to do that. But it was a terrible thing. 600,000 people lost their lives because these guys, and they seceded in defense of slavery. That was the main, if you read the Articles of Secession from these states, the Civil War was about slavery.
Yeah, and I'm not defending. I'm not defending every statue. I'm sorry.
This idea that this is somehow some sort of a gentle reminder of our history and the can-do spirit. I reject that absolutely. These statues, the Confederate battle flag, it stands for nothing else.
Especially the statues that went up during Jim Crow or the Civil Rights era. I mean, I think, Kristen, with those statues should have your plaque on it that explains this statue was erected to intimidate black people during the days of the civil rights era. You know, that would put a little more context into it. This was a Civil War leader, but this statue was built as a protest to efforts to modernize.
But it was built, and it's been there for how many years?
No, I'm with you.
And again, it is part of our fabric as a country. These were Americans who were fighting in the Confederacy. It is a shameful part of our past. I just think it's silly. Let's talk about race relations. Let's talk about total intolerance and the perversion of the people who were marching. But dissecting and going now onto taking down statues that somehow is going to solve our problems, or that you are a racist person if you don't agree that every statue should be taken down, that's taking us down the wrong path.
I don't disagree with you. I don't think Eric thinks that either, but I don't disagree with you that I don't think they should all be taken down. In Birmingham, Alabama, the mayor, who I believe is African-American, I'm not totally sure, has covered up a statue there, a Civil War statue. He's being sued now by the Attorney General of Alabama because of it. They're going to go to court. The mayor says, look, I'm not about tearing this statue down, but I just want it to have a little more context. I want there to be a little more information about this statue.
How does that not satisfy you, Eric? I mean, you want them to all come down, and I do think that's sort of—
Why isn't there
a
statue of
history?
Osama bin Laden outside the 9/11 memorial? Because statues are honors. It's not history. A statue is not history. A statue is an honor. A monument is an honor. You take these statues and put them into a museum, fine. But what does it say when a town has a statue of Robert E. Lee, or a high school named for Robert E. Lee, or a main road named for Robert E. Lee?
Okay,
what does that tell?
But those
the African,
are all over the country.
What does
too.
That tell African American people about?
This is
who we honor. We honor the man who led a rebellion in order to keep you in bondage. That's who we're honoring. And how do you get around that? How do you just say, oh, no, it's about sweet tea and sassafras?
No, that's not what anyone is saying.
I don't
we're
see
sitting
that
here in the Midwest
statues.
In Chicago making all of these judgments about what we think other towns should do with their public spaces. I don't know when the statue was erected and whether or not they had a referendum and decided whether or not it should be. But that is part of our past. Those were Americans. I hate to make you swallow this fact, but I don't think it makes any sense to be going around and ripping down statues because of the temperature is hot right now.
But what if it's
and
local?
That's the solution.
What if that decision, though, in Charlottesville, the case for the Lee statue was
it's like burning books to me.
It was a local decision. I mean, really?
Yeah.
So you are here in Chicago going to tell the people of Charlottesville how they should react to their local statue? I mean,
right.
That should
I'm
be up to them.
I'm saying not.
You say, I'm sorry.
I'm saying not. I'm saying that I think it should be a local decision. I think in Baltimore, I wouldn't support the idea of going around in darkness and taking down some of these statues as a way of out of fear that you're going to create controversy or, you know, I don't think that's a good idea. But I don't live in Baltimore.
Well, so you're contradicting yourself then.
Well,
so if it's
I'm
a
hearing.
Local decision to take it down, why the hell can't they take it down whenever they want? And especially if it's safer to take it down during the night, because these Nazi thugs are going to be there if they do it during the day.
Right. I'm just saying I disagree with that. If I lived in Charlottesville, if I lived in Baltimore, and now I live in Chicago, and they're talking about taking down something on the South Side, I just don't think it solves any problems. I would not be for it. I'm not for burning books. I'm not for taking away things from people because they are offensive. I don't think I'm being contradictory.
We agree more than we disagree. I mean, I'm a little worried, too, about now going after Balboa. Where will it stop?
This is not about burning books. This is not about saying that we're getting rid of materials. I'm saying put them in the museum context. Get them off the public square where they are honors.
That's hiding them, Eric, don't you think?
No. There's a total difference between having a statue of Robert E. Lee in your town, in Lee Park, in the middle of your town, and having a statue of Robert E. Lee in a museum or a bust of Robert E. Lee in a museum. Huge difference.
Well, what happens if we do a referendum in Chicago about this? And what if we decide to keep that statue up? I guess you'd have no choice about that.
I would have no choice about that. I think it's kind of strange that we have named a road, a street, and have a statue for Balbo, who was one of Mussolini's top aviators. It's kind of a strange thing. There's so many other Italian Americans we can be proud of, or Italians.
We have a monument on just south of Grant Park that Mussolini gave the city of Chicago. Now nobody goes around and holds ceremonies near it, but it's there.
They will now,
and it's part of our history. Yeah.
Our mayor had a relationship.
I was thinking Nazi, you know, and so that's...
But Germany is pretty well whitewashed Nazi references out of its public square.
I like going to Europe. You like going to Europe. I think you guys probably do too. And I'm trying to come up with a specific case, but I'm very confident that there are statues in the public place of past regimes, whether it was you know, felled kings in Prague that no longer represents the current government or things like that. I don't know that they take all of those down. Now, there are cases when they do for the Nazis, I think for the Soviets in Soviet Russia. But it seems to me that statues can survive a change in government or a change in regime change or things like that. Am I crazy?
Well, we don't have statues of any of the kings of England. And they've melted one down for bullets during the revolution here in the U.S. I mean, it's these, you know, you don't have other countries. Don't, I mean, first of all, you're right. Germany has basically purged it of all Hitler statuary and even I think you can't even fly the Nazi flag in Germany. Mm-hmm. They're more severe about it than we would be. But and again, what someone wants to do in their own yard or wants to have in their own public personal library, whatever, or even in public libraries, in a library or museum setting, it's all fine with me. I just think that we really have to draw this distinction between an honor. And that's what, when you name a school or a park or a building or have a statue, that's an honor. It's not history. It's an honor.
Let's move on.
We should not honor those people.
So. Jeff Sessions says Chicago is an example of lawlessness because of its sanctuary city status. He said, call your mayor. If you don't want to lose your federal funding, Steve Bertrand, what should Chicagoans do? Should we press Mayor Emanuel to
come? Who said this?
Jeff Sessions.
Is he still the Attorney General?
Yep.
Oh.
Call your mayor. Otherwise, you're going to lose money and it's going to be on the mayor's back.
We'll see how that works for him. I think probably most people in Chicago would support the mayor.
Yeah. And what do you say?
I understand his point. They're trying to use federal dollars to enforce federal laws. I mean, the guy's got facts on his side, but I don't think he has truth.
It's not that many dollars either. It's a few million dollars.
Okay. I mean, a few million now, I don't know. But
in my neighborhood, that's nothing.
It's a radio talk show.
Where are you on this, Kristen?
I think there's a real, very large missing link between people who are living here illegally and the violent crime that is occurring. I'm just making a leap here, but I don't think there are any studies to suggest that that is a direct link. And so for Sessions to be saying, you know, to be connecting sanctuary city status with our violent crime problem, it's just not real. It's inaccurate. And I just think that I believe in local control. I think that what we need is true immigration reform. And so Jeff Sessions should be worrying about that and let Rahm Emanuel worry about the violent crime problem in the city, which is very real.
But
it's not immigrant related.
No. Now, the only caveat I will put to that is that we have, because of sanctuary city status, we don't ask people their status when they are arrested or charged with different crimes. So I think there's probably a lack of data there too. But I'm just going to presume that on the south and west sides where you have hotspots of crime, we're up to what, 450 homicides so far this year. I don't believe that is directly linked to people living here illegally. That doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, I think Kristen and Steve are right about this. And I also understand that law enforcement people find that if you have a situation where people are afraid in the immigrant or the illegal immigrant community are afraid to report crimes because they don't want to get caught up in this net, that increases your crime rate. So that actually having these sanctuary policies helps control crime. Now, I don't have my white papers to prove that, but this is what I've heard. So, it does seem to me like this ought to be something that the mayor of Chicago and the police can handle themselves.
But Sessions is right, in that Chicago is not following federal law and what they do. I mean, he's not
any sanctuary city. He's
right,
not,
right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I beg to differ a little bit. Well, it's not the job of the local police to act as ICE agents. That's not their purview.
If federal law says they're supposed to ask, then I think they're supposed to follow
say
federal law. I'm glad
over.
They don't. I'm
okay,
glad
but
they don't. But I'm
just let me give you a scenario. So somebody, say, is pulled over for running a stop sign or something, and for some reason or other, maybe they don't have a driver's license, but their only crime is a moving violation, and now they're being detained. Should they ascertain, local police, the immigration status, the citizenship of that person? And if they can't prove that that person is a U.S. citizen, should they detain them longer than they would if that were a citizen and hold them for federal authorities?
What does the law say they should do?
I'm not sure what the answer
is.
The law is that you can't hold – the crime is you ran a stop sign, right? And you can't hold somebody for 3 days for running a stop sign.
But if someone ran a stop sign, you pulled him over, and he had blood on his hands, You might look into that. And if he was responsible for another crime,
that's a different scenario than I'm describing.
Well,
if somebody's
I don't
being
know.
Held.
I'm arguing on behalf of Jeff Sessions. What happened here?
I know. I'm so confused.
Well, I don't like it. I like the sanctuary city. I think we should continue to, you know, flip off the ICE and those in the movement. I strongly believe in sanctuary cities. All I'm saying is that technically we're not following federal law in doing it.
That is correct. I would also point out that I know the mayor likes to use this as it's a morality issue, and I'm sure that's partially true. But I think the origin of sanctuary cities and the reason, especially in Chicago, that they abide is because they're overwhelmed. They can't. I mean, we have, 10,000 people in our Cook County Jail at any given time.
Yeah.
Prosecutors are overwhelmed. The state's attorney's office is overwhelmed. The police department is overwhelmed. And so I think that has more to do with why we are a sanctuary city, because there's just no way to do what the federal government wants you to do with the resources that we have.
Let's just very quickly, and then I want to get to school funding and then your recommendations for the week. But does anybody have anything else they want to say about this bizarre week in the United States? Out of Charlottesville, the Manufacturing Council up and disbanding itself.
Steve Bannon calling his boss a fool.
Yeah, that was a very interesting, and maybe that's going to be his professional obituary, because it's amazing how he disagreed with the president. But I don't know, Eric, you've been a little quiet over there. Just any last observations about what a reckless week it was?
Well, just about the Steve Bannon article where he talked about how what Trump has been saying about fire and fury directed North Korea is all bluff, because he knows that you can't attack North Korea without incinerating Seoul, basically.
I think the phrase we said, they've got us.
Yeah,
got
right. Us. North Korea has us, the United States. We have no options here. No military options.
I mean, the varying responses that Trump gave to what happened in Charlottesville, extremely troubling. You know, his first response was strange. Then he had that robotic statement on Monday, which kind of, I thought, you know, served just fine. If it had been delivered with a little bit more warmth.
Or if he had written it, yeah.
Well, and then he came back at that news conference Tuesday afternoon and he just rambled and contradicted himself from the day before. And we've said this so many times, but he's just not fit to be president.
Is that rambling press conference going to be remembered? I mean, is that just another roll of the eyes?
Another roll of the eyes,
really?
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I watched it, and you saw pictures of his aides later, like John Kelly, his new chief of staff, kind of crossing his arms and uncrossing his arms because he wasn't supposed to take questions, right?
Yeah.
Wasn't supposed to go off script of infrastructure. It's just,
Nobody asked about infrastructure.
No.
Well, there
and
was
the
news conference later with Chow.
But there's no obligation to ask him about infrastructure either.
But again, it's just like it's the inexperience that he had his original speech in his pocket, so he wanted to take those questions, and yet he's still
he
unprepared.
Did. Became armed.
Good point. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've got it right
this
here.
This was his first big test as president, right? We said all along one of the interesting things about the first 7 months of his presidency is he hasn't been tested by a major crisis. I don't know how major we would describe this crisis in Charlottesville, but this was a moment for a president to step up, and it wasn't a difficult moment oratorically. It's the kind of thing you can imagine Obama knocking it out of the park.
Bush would have knocked it out of the park. Clinton would have handled this.
Mike Pence knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
I mean, his vice president was
George W.
clear.
Bush would have knocked it off.
Yeah.
He's not very eloquent.
And
I mean, it's not hard.
To unite the country, knit the country together, and yeah, it was not hard. It was a layup, you know, as they were saying. And he blew it. And it makes you think about what's going to happen when there's a crisis that's bigger than this, and how he's not going to handle it well.
I think, unfortunately, John, it will remain a blip only because he's destined to do something. It's not funny. You've got to stop laughing.
I do.
It's not funny anymore.
Do.
It's just
don't yell at
I'm
me
smiling.
For laughing.
I have to. It's the only
really?
Way we can. I mean, it's so absurd what our country is enduring that you can't wake up every day with angst. You can't.
I can watch me every day.
Well, that laughter might not have been because I thought it
was
hilarious,
yeah.
But it is a natural reaction.
I know.
You just go, holy cow, the absurdity of it. The school funding clock is ticking. The money's been approved. How it's going to be divided up is what's really stalling its implementation here in Illinois. Does anyone believe that the governor and the House Speaker really care about which schools get which monies? Is this really just a political game, and that happens to be the pawn that they're fighting over? I mean, I know there's two different views about how the money should be dispersed, and they're fighting over that. At least this is my understanding of it. But I just wonder if, I mean, like, is it absolutely apparent what the right way to spend this money is? No, it's not. There's two different views on it. And these guys have dug their heels in, not because they know they're right, but because they don't like the other guy. Is that a fair assessment of what's happening here?
I think so. I think so. I mean, I would give, if you had to give me the little meter, I would say that Democrats under Mike Madigan's control had a long time to deal with what was a growing gap between what rich and poor districts could spend, and they did nothing. They did nothing for years, even when they had a governor who was begging them to send him a bill. So does Mike Madigan really care about this gap that has existed for, you know, the last 25 years? No. Does the governor? I don't know. I said in a column, I think he's off the mark. He's more focused on protecting what wealthy districts have than focusing on what low-income districts need. And to me, it is a conservative principle to care about low-income districts and to take state tax money and distribute it to schools based on need. That is a conservative principle, and I don't see Rauner advocating for that.
You know, what we need to do is get more eclipses. Nothing's been better for downstate Illinois tourism. I've learned more about Illinois, south of Peoria, in the last 2 weeks, with everybody talking about Macanda and Carbondale and Marion and Murfreesboro. And I went to school there. I lived there for 3 years. I know a little bit about southern Illinois, but good Lord, we are all super-duper eclipse.
Is that coming up?
Okay. Zorn eclipses. You're for them, against them. Go.
I'm against them. Darkest in the middle of the day. It's not right.
You know, the temperature is supposed to drop 20 degrees when the eclipse
Boo.
Rolls through. How
Boo
awesome will
for
that
eclipse.
Be? I'm more jazzed about this than I thought I would be. I don't know if I'm a science geek. I think I am.
Do you wish you were going down there?
I do, and I want to do something. And I want to do something in the moment, too, and I'm not going to get a chance to. I'll be on the air, and our reporters will be there, but I want to birth a child or conceive a child or get married or renew my vows or pray or compose or do something in the moment.
Has a talk show host ever conceived a child on the air?
I know people who have tried.
I think it probably has happened.
Those stories are legend, and I won't tell them here.
How much time do you have? Like, how long does the eclipse
two
last?
Minutes. That's plenty of time.
Okay,
plenty.
I'm just checking.
2 minutes, wink.
Yep, got it. Okay.
I'm for eclipses. I'm not especially, what, Eric's against them? I'm not that excited about it, though. You won't notice it here. So.
No, you will not.
What do you notice it? We'll have like 90%.
Doesn't matter. The sun's so bright, we won't notice
10%
it
10% of our sun is still going to be plenty bright.
If what I didn't if tell it's you cloudy? We were having an eclipse. Then we see nothing?
It'll still be dark, but you won't have that corona, the black ball in the middle. Do I have to explain this to you people? You have not been geeking out on this?
No.
You're kind of out there more than most people on it.
Okay, let's do our recommendations for the week. Things that you are eating, reading, drinking, consuming in some intellectual or physical manner. Eric, we'll come to you first.
I'm a little embarrassed about this because I should have read this book many, many years ago. I'm listening to the audiobook of The Devil in the White City by Eric Larson. Everybody here has read it, I'm sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody in the listening audience has read it.
You haven't read that book?
I'm the last person, but it's
I don't
really,
want to be like that, but really?
It's a really good audiobook. Well, I've read it many times, of course, but I'm listening to it for the first time. No, it's been fun listening to that book. So if you haven't, if you're one of the few people who hasn't read or listened to that book.
What story is more compelling to you, the fair story or the murder story?
Oh, the murder story. I keep wading through the fair stuff to get to the murder stuff.
Yeah. I'm reading The Grapes of Wrath now. I'm sorry.
How about you, Steve?
I'm reading Handmaiden's Tale.
That would be good. Yeah, but yeah. I'm recommending Statue Story Chicago. Not that I've done it, but, you know, that's that program in the city where I think there are 20 statues around the city where you download a program, you walk up to it, and the person who is the statue ends up speaking to you.
Oh, I didn't know about that.
Oh, yeah, it's a very cool idea.
Is it a podcast or is it just an app?
It's an app, I think, and it's triggered by proximity. So, you know, the Picasso's one who speaks, the Nathan Hale here in the Chicago Tribune Tower lobby speaks, so you just come upon them. The statue tells you a little bit about who you're looking at.
And are you just doing that to antagonize Eric because he thinks they should all be taken down anyway?
Well, why not? If we're so freaked out about these statues, why don't we learn a little bit about the ones around us?
Nathan Hale once uttered a racial epithet, I'm pretty sure. So
I'm sure he did.
Better go cover it up.
Down he comes.
All right, what are you liking, Kristen?
Well, I just got a book in the mail for my book club called The Woman in Cabin 10. So I'll be back with a report on that. She's crazy. She's a journalist on traveling, just like you, Steve. Maybe it's about you.
Could be.
And the other thing, just to kind of jump off of what Steve said, We are getting more and more news about that we're moving out of Tribune Tower, all of us, WGN, the news side. So if you are out there and you haven't visited in a while, come and look at this beautiful building. Come in the lobby, read the inscriptions on the walls, walk around, because the newspaper's not going to be here very much
longer. Apparently going to be going, the latest report was we're going to the Prudential Building.
It's down Wacker?
By Millennium Park.
Oh, that's you. We're going to be on Wacker, right?
Yeah.
But over in the neighborhood, it's becoming a media hood. Over there.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm hearing good things about our move, although I'm going to miss this historic building. And I hope the new tenants keep the engraved walls inside.
I think they have to keep some of it, right?
I think they do, too.
The lobby is landmarked and the exterior is landmarked, I think.
Yeah.
But my desk is not landmarked.
My recommendation is a little book called Seven Brief Lessons on Physics by Carlo Rovelli.
You're not a science geek at all.
And it's like 70 pages, and it's almost pocket size. You could read this in the time it takes you to have a significant bowel movement. It's really...
70 pages on physics?
But it's about time. It's about black holes. It's about what happened at the Big Bang. How did it evolve? And then did it collapse again on itself? Stuff like that. Uh-huh. It's a lot of things. And yet it's so brief that it doesn't dwell on anything or bore you. It just kind of presents the wonder to you, makes you want to find out more.
You know, that statement of yours about the bowel movement, maybe for the paperback, they can use that for a blurb.
My gosh.
Seven brief
Lord
lessons
help me.
On physics. I'm sorry. That's Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune. Kristen McQuarrie, too. Thanks for coming in. Steve Bertrand's here from WGN Radio. Benji was the engineer today. Thank you, Ben Cortez. Elif Garris produces The Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another podcast on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online on the WGN Plus app or WGNradio.com. Just click on the WGN Plus tab. The Mincing Rascals podcast is a presentation of the WGN Plus Podcast Network. You can also catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on the John Williams Show on WGN Radio.